Good day, everyone, and welcome to the UBS Global Energy Transitions call series, Energy Storage Solutions with Amprius, hosted by John Windham. My name is Levy, and I'm your event manager. During the presentation, lines will remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please press star zero on your telephone, and the coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties that this conference is being recorded. And now, I'd like to introduce to you, John. Please proceed.
Perfect. Thanks, Levy, and welcome everybody to the latest installment of the UBS Energy Transition Call Series. This is your host, John Windham. I head up Alternative Energy and Environmental Services Equity Research here at UBS. And in this call series, which we've been running since 2018, we try to connect UBS institutional investor clients with energy experts and innovative companies that are in some way enabling or driving the energy transition. All right, today we'll be talking energy storage with Amprius Technologies, ticker AMPX. They manufacture high energy, high-power lithium-ion batteries, producing high-energy density cells. The company's corporate headquarters is in Fremont, California, and maintains R&D lab and a pilot manufacturing facility for the fabrication of silicon nanowire anodes and cells. So on the call, we're very happy to have with us Dr. Kang Sun, who is the CEO of Amprius Technologies. Before I turn it over to Dr. Sun, a few logistical details. To go over the format of today's call will be an opening presentation or comments by Dr. Sun introducing you to Amprius Technologies. We'll then do Q&A. Do feel free to ask questions on the live call. Levy, the operator, will provide you instructions in a little bit on how you can do that. As always, you know, some of you prefer to email me questions. Please do that if you would like. I will bring them up anonymously as time permits. And so I'm sure if you found your way to this call series, you have my email address, but it's John, J-O-N, dot Windham, W-I-N-D-H-A-M, at UBS.com. Again, John, J-O-N, dot Windham, W-I-N-D-H-A-M, at UBS.com. And then lastly, as a UBS research analyst, I am required to provide certain disclosures related to the nature, my own nature and the nature of UBS's relationship with any companies discussed on today's call. A full list of disclosures is available on ubs.com/disclosures, or do feel free to email me and I can send them to you. And then lastly, this call in and of itself is not a recommendation by UBS to transact in any security. All right. With that out of the way, Dr. Sun, really appreciate you being here today to share the Amprius story with me and UBS clients. Certainly, batteries and battery technology and how do we improve the availability, cost, and power density of batteries is, I think, front of mind for almost all investors and a sort of a key component in the energy transition. So really appreciate you being here. Well, I turn the floor over to you for some opening comments. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Good morning, everyone. Very glad to have this opportunity to share our technology and business with you. Amprius is a high-performance lithium-ion battery developer and manufacturer. Our high performance based on our unique silicon anode structure, originally developed at Stanford University, and Amprius registered company back to 2008. 2010, we started full operation. 2014, we designed this, I would say, the most ideal silicon anode structure in industry. 2016, we built the manufacturing process and the manufacturing production line. 2018, we received the first customer order from Airbus and the U.S. Army for high-performance batteries. So we have been in manufacturing for 5 years, deliver the products to Airbus, AeroVironment, Teledyne FLIR, BAE Systems, U.S. military, and other customers. So we are the company already in commercialization for over 4 years. We have a pilot facility, a pilot production facility located in Fremont, California. Company currently is looking for large-scale manufacturing facility in Colorado, Texas, and Georgia. We think we will complete the site selection sometime this month, definitely in Q1. So Amprius technology based on silicon anode technology. As we know, the current generation lithium-ion battery anode is graphite. 99% of the batteries use graphite. But graphite has a limit capacity. Graphite's capacity is 360 milliamp hour per gram. Silicon has a 10 times higher capacity. Silicon's capacity is 4,000 milliamp hour per gram. So the silicon is the ideal material as an anode for lithium-ion battery. However, silicon has a very high volume expansion coefficiency, so that causes some challenge for silicon to be used as an anode in lithium-ion battery industry. The industry and the academics has spent over four decades trying to get this issue resolved without much success. Now, we designed a very unique silicon structure we call silicon nanowire structure. Today, the Amprius is the only company practicing this technology. Now, we are the only supplier in commercial market supply silicon nanowire anode-based batteries. Why is it important to use a silicon nanowire anode as an anode for lithium-ion battery? First, we take full advantage of silicon characteristics. We deliver very high energy density. I give you a reference. For almost all the batteries used for EV today, the energy at a cell level, the energy density about 260 to 280 watt per kilo. Amprius has been shipping commercial product at 450 watt per kilo. Then our volumetric energy density is very high. Our volumetric energy density is 1150 watt per liter. This is very high. Then we have very high power density. Power density is very important for electrical mobility. For everything moves, for aviation industry, for marine vessels, for electrical vehicles. So we have our battery can perform to 10C in terms of power density. Amprius battery, because of this unique structure, also offer very high charging rate. We charge it from 0 to 80%, less than 6 minutes. Yeah, I invite you to visit our website. You can see live demo video about our charging. Also our safety. We met U.S. military safety spec. There's a nail penetration test. The last, our battery has very wide temperature performance. Our battery work at minus 30 degrees Celsius as well as 55 degrees Celsius. So this is the widest temperature performance of a commercial battery available in the market. So the company has a number of blue chip customers in aviation industry. Why we focus on aviation industry at this moment? Because we have limited production capacity at this moment. Also, we are the critical supplier. We are the go-to supplier for aviation. Aviation require high power density and high energy density. Energy density gave the cruising time. The power density provided the power for landing and taking off. Our battery is perfect for aviation at this time. Now, our battery also can be used for electrical vehicles. Now, we have not supplied the commercial products to electrical EV OEMs, but we are the active member at the United States Advanced Battery Consortium. Okay, we were awarded two contracts to develop high energy density, low cost electrical vehicle batteries. So the company's major challenging today is capacity. Yeah, our priority is capacity. We have more customer than we can serve. So our capacity expansion is very, very important for us to serve our current customer, also broaden our market participation. In addition to aviation, we would like to engage other electrical mobility market segment. So Amprius merged with the Kensington Capital back to September, then we at least on NASDAQ, we released on New York Stock Exchange, about 4 months ago. So the company today, we have sufficient capital for us to build a phase one manufacturing facility, you know, once we decide the site for the manufacturing facility. Now, we have our product have been evaluated and validated by over 30 customers today. So we anticipate we will have more customer engagement in 2023 as we're building our capacity. So this is a brief summary of what we are doing, what Amprius is. I will be glad to answer your questions.
Sorry about that. Was on mute. That's just on. Thank you for that. Levy, can you provide participants on instructions on how they can ask any questions, and I'm going to get the conversation started?
Absolutely. Everyone, if you wish to ask one, please press star one.
Okay, perfect. So let's start sort of the beginning, and, you know, recurring participants in this call series. You know, I'm not a very technical person when it comes to the physics of batteries or how they work. But it would be fair to say I just sort of bucket Amprius, I think, of as a very high-end battery, very high density, really good for high-end applications. And one, is that assumption correct? And then two, is it a natural then assumption that it's relatively more expensive than, say, like just a standard lithium-ion battery? Are those two fair comments?
Yeah, John. The expensive is relative. Also, the manufacturing cost today in our company, I think, is irrelevant because our capacity is so small. Once we scale up to the gigawatt scale, okay, theoretically, we should be in pairs with the graphite anode battery. You see, we are not changing anything but just the anode. We simply just use our silicon anode to replace graphite. Now, anode cost in lithium-ion battery probably around 12% to 15%. So that's not that much. Yeah. So the rest of the this is the advantage our technology has. We highly leverage current manufacturing protocol, process, and equipment. The only thing changes is to replace the silicon graphite manufacturing process with our silicon anode manufacturing process.
Got it. And then maybe just sort of walk through the revenue model as you scale. Like, specifically, who is the end customer? Is it another battery manufacturer? Do you actually make the end product? Just the very basics of the business model, how you plan to generate revenue over the next 4 or 5 years, and who the specific customers are, not just the end market, but who's the actual off-taker of your product, and is it selling technology or selling a product?
Yeah. At this moment, our business model is selling the battery cells to OEMs, for example, Airbus, AeroVironment, Teledyne FLIR, U.S. military. They are the customers. We deliver the battery cells to them. Yeah. So since we have a high performance silicon anode, now in the future, our business model could be flexible. We could just sell the anode to battery manufacturers. We could license a joint venture. Now, we like to proliferate this technology. We believe this technology will be mainstream technology in the industry. In order to let everybody use it, we need to have a flexible business model. But for now, for the next couple of years, we'll be the battery cell manufacturer.
Got it. Thank you. Maybe let's get into a little bit of talking about ramping production over the course of time. Can we get into details of that, where you are now, the timeline of production that you have in the plan now?
Yeah, we have a very limited capacity here in Fremont, California, because partially because of the local permit for large scale manufacturing. So we have about 250 kilowatt hours capacity available to us. That's not enough for our customers. Next stage, we are looking for, as I mentioned, that there are three states we are searching for, the sites, the Colorado, Texas, and the Georgia. I think we already reached the final stage of the discussion. Once we have that facility available to us, takes about, this is a brownfield, this is not a greenfield. We found the building, we can retrofit. So it takes about 18 to 24 months to build the capacity we have. As you know, we were awarded DOE cost sharing grants, the $50 million, from the Biden administration. So that dictates we have about a 500 megawatt facility capacity available. So our phase one will start at about a 500 megawatt or capacity inconsistent with the requirements of a DOE grant program.
Got it. And so the 18 to 24 months of construction, you're still choosing sites, which I have a couple questions on that just in general. Have you given any sort of indication of what is the CapEx of that facility and then how much of the DOE program covers that?
Yeah, DOE program will be the $50 million, 50. So for 1 gigawatt, the manufacturing facility we have, the 1 gigawatt, the CapEx estimation is about $120 to $150 million. Now, we're still trying to figure out the construction cost with construction companies, but for the CapEx, is around $120 to $150 million for 1 gigawatt capacity.
Got it. So I imagine it's not half that. If you're doing 500 megawatts in phase one, it's a little front-loaded on the CapEx, and then it's easier to expand the 500 megawatts to 1 gigawatt. Am I thinking about that right?
Right, yeah. It's scale up one, because the facility we are looking has a multi-gigawatt potential. That means a 5 gigawatt, 8 gigawatt potential. Yeah, but because we like to accommodate the DOE program, we like to start with 500 megawatt. Add another 500 megawatt is relatively easy.
Got it. And then maybe I wanted to talk a little bit, just on a high level, because the fact that you're looking to locate sites between Colorado, I think Colorado, Texas, and Georgia is where you sort of identified. You know, it's an interesting time in the United States. Post the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act, you've seen a lot of capacity expansions announcements across the United States, particularly in the solar market, which I'm closer to than necessarily battery manufacturing. But what I found really interesting is they're overwhelmingly in Texas, Georgia, and some in Arizona, but Texas and Georgia have done very, very well in attracting new manufacturing facilities. And maybe without talking about the individual states, you're still looking, but just sort of in general, how do you think about siting the plant? What are some of the factors that are important? I don't know if there's local tax credits that are available, or is it more just about, you know, cost of labor, availability, transportation? If you could just talk through the things that matter to you when you consider where you're going to locate the plant. Thanks.
Right. Yeah, John, good question. It depends on the industry, right? For our, for the battery industry, I built battery factories five, 6 years before. Not in the United States. Okay, here, the first thing is, of course, the electricity availability, the power availability. That's very important to us. We have to have stable power. If you know, we have a power hiccups all the time, that's going to be it's going to be a big problem for our manufacturing. The secondary, of course, is the skilled labor availability. We're looking for the place have not just the cottage colleges, universities, also the vocational schools, the operators for our production lines, local tax incentives. For battery manufacturing, even the weather is important. Why we mention Colorado, because Colorado actually has a very good weather for battery. It's very dry. Yeah. The cold and the dry, both for solar. You know, John, you probably heard of the GA Solar. I used to run GA Solar years ago. Yeah. So so the battery industry, we like to have the low humidity area. So there are a lot of things to be considered. Yeah, also the permitting, the regulatory issues, okay, all those kind of, even the political issues, right? Like Ford, I think they vote out that the residents, they don't let them to build a factory there. I don't remember, in Tennessee or somewhere. So we have a laundry list about 20 questions, 20 criteria. So we think currently we identify the facility, I think it met most of those our requirements.
Got it. No, I appreciate you sharing those thoughts. And well, your alumni, GA Solar, I think it's 2 gigawatts announced Arizona.
Arizona, yes.
Yeah, it's just interested in your thoughts, because one of the things, you know, a lot of the conversations I had with investors, a little bit, you know, off our specific topic here, was fears about the longevity of the IRA. Right, especially people outside of the United States, European and Asian-based investors, they go, well, if the election doesn't go good in 2 years, isn't this whole thing possibly get rolled back? And one of the things I say is that don't underestimate the Republican support, quiet support for what's happening. One, you know, utilities get their renewables a little bit cheaper, but just go look at a map of where all the manufacturing facilities that have been announced. It's like overwhelming in Republican jurisdictions, and it's once you get a taste of those jobs, it's hard to go and push them back. Anyways, a bit of a side, but all right. Maybe the other thing I wasn't exactly clear on, because you mentioned aviation a few times, and we'll get into sort of the next stage in a minute, how maybe this technology will ultimately scale into other applications, but it seems like aviation is a big focus in the beginning. Can you talk about a little bit of what is the actual in use? Is a component on the airplane? Is it meant to actually power the plane? I know we've had a company on this call series called Buy Aerospace, which is already producing essentially training airplanes that are battery powered. And so is it actually for powering aviation, or is it a battery on a plane you use to power electronics and things like that, a bit of both? If you just talk through what the real end case is, how they're being used over the next 2 or 3 years, not really out in the future, but like the sort of first batteries out the factory, how they're used. Thanks.
Yeah, there are a number of applications in aviation, also aerospace. You know, some are unmanned, okay, like drones, right, pseudo satellite. Okay, those are the they are part like Airbus high altitude pseudo satellite flying devices that are powered by our batteries. Now, AeroVironment drones powered by Amprius batteries. Okay, Teledyne FLIR's drones powered by Amprius batteries. Now, those are unmanned aircraft. Okay, this is one category. The second category, of course, is the passenger electrical aircraft. Okay, that include the eVTOL, as you heard in the GOV, or there are many companies doing the EV, working on the eVTOL. Also, the regional airlines, that's 19 passenger electrical aircraft. Now, our battery can serve all those market segments. This is actually quite a large market segment. Now, if you believe Morgan Stanley's data and statistics data, this is going to be $50 billion market just for battery in 20 couple years later. Yeah, so it's a very large market. You know, we are engaged with the market leaders in the aviation industry, Airbus, Teledyne FLIR. Those are some of those are used for industrial applications. Some are used for military applications. Yeah, drones are big market. Okay, not just for military applications, for logistics like Amazon want to deliver the product by drones. In entertainment industry, movie industry, agricultural industry, all this industry has one. Two requirements. One, your battery has to be light, okay, for flying devices. Yeah. Two, you have to have a long duration. You have to enable us to fly longer. So for given energy density, you know, our battery is half the volume compared to currently commercial battery in the market. For given volume, our battery delivers 70% more energy. So that's why the aviation industry is a very attractive market segment for us. That doesn't mean we cannot get it into EV. Once we have capacity, we like to explore other market segments. For now, the aviation is really a good market segment for us.
Got it. Thank you. And I guess without putting your words in your mouth, then the way I would sort of hear that is, hey, we have a technology. The high-density battery, there's a lot of value to aviation. We're just ramping capacity, building capacity now. The aviation industry is massive. That's the most obvious first place to go to. You have maybe a long runway just meeting that demand. But then in the future, you would think a battery like this would also have, you know, I don't know if it's 5 or 7 years or 10 years away, eventually could scale. But in sort of that medium term, I should really think of it as primarily aviation in markets.
Yeah, because aviation qualification time for us, aviation battery has a much higher requirement than electrical vehicle. You can imagine, right? If you have accidents, you know, you cannot just open the door and run. Okay, so the safety issues, so the, even including the pressure performance, temperature performance, you can imagine, it's very, very tough. Yeah, however, the aviation, the qualification cycle at this moment actually lower, particularly for the drones, okay, for the unmanned electrical aircrafts, the qualification time is shorter than electrical vehicle. Okay, that's another advantage we are taking. Okay, for electrical vehicle, it takes quite a few years to get on the production line, but for the aviation, normally we for the drones, okay, for passenger aircrafts may take longer. For the drones, for the pseudo satellites, this thing, the development cycle is much shorter.
Got it. And I have one more question, and we'll go to the lines, and I'll get to some of the emailed questions a bit later in the call. But I guess that's how I just want to cover the competitive landscape. Who do you see as your competitors, whether it's different technologies or companies? Who do you sort of run into as providing maybe a different solution, maybe an alternative solution? So just talk a little bit about the competitive landscape and the protectability or defensibility of your intellectual property.
Yeah. First, to talk about our technology protection. We have a very solid patent portfolio. We started this business early. We take it to about 14, 15 years ago. At that time, not many people engaged in silicon nanotechnology. So we have a very solid patent portfolio. We have about 80 patents. Okay. Then, most importantly, we have extensive know-how. The structure we designed, we know how to manufacture. We know what equipment needed to manufacture. So today, Amprius is the only company owns this technology and practices this technology in commercial market. Yeah. In terms of competition, there are two camps. Okay, there is one camp is incumbents, Panasonic Energy, LG Energy, CATL, a lot of Chinese companies, Japanese companies, Korean companies. Yeah, the battery company, battery industry has been Asian industry. Okay, now the North American and the Europeans started building the facility. but a few years ago, four or five years ago, you look at the GM's supplier, they are Koreans, right? Tesla supplier, Japanese. Ford supplier, Chinese, Korean. So those companies are is Amprius true competitors. Of course, you can mention, you know, there are a lot of other emerging technology, lithium sulfur, zinc, air, solid state. I think our real competitor are incumbents. The company command huge market share. The company command the supply chain. The company has economics. And then they have years manufacturing experience. So we, at Amprius, we see those incumbents, okay, those market leaders in the industry today, they are our competitors. So we certainly cannot compete in capacity. We cannot build enough capacity for chasing them. What we can do is we deliver high-performance product. High-performance doesn't mean just the high energy density, high power, fast charging time. High performance means overall performance, and the cost. If we can deliver that, you know, we will be active player in lithium ion in the battery industry.
Got it. Thank you. And maybe to sneak one in, because I had an emailed question that's right along that question, is specifically asking, and I think it's a good question, so certainly given, you know, I don't know the difference between the tech all that much, but can you talk a little bit about how Amprius is different from Enovix?
Technologies, yeah.
Familiar with Enovix?
Actually, we are both doing silicon anode, but we're doing a very different way, we can deliver, the big difference is here, we can deliver high specific energy density as well as high volumetric energy density. That's the big difference. And I believe we have... our structure can deliver high specific energy density. That's the watt hour per kilo, which is very important for electrical mobility. Okay, if you don't have that, you only can work for electronics, consumer electronics batteries. You cannot do for electrical vehicles, aviation, marine vessel. You cannot do things like that. Now, also, we deliver very high power density. So our structure is different from others. I don't want to comment on Enovix. If you study their investor presentation, you can see what they emphasize. Yeah. So the difference is Amprius battery can perform extremely well for electrical mobility market segments. That is the electrical vehicle, aviation, marine vessels, and the power tools. Yeah, anything requires the power and energy density we can serve.
All right, perfect. Thank you for that. Levy, why don't we check to see if there's anyone on the line? Thanks.
Yes, we have our first question. It's coming from Will Griffin. Will, go ahead.
Excellent. Thank you very much. My first question is just on kind of looking ahead. You know, you're planning to begin scaling production here. What do you see as kind of the main challenges or risks to successfully scaling production? Are there any sort of uncertainties or hurdles that you need to overcome kind of relative to the production levels you're at today, or is the process pretty much identical just at a larger scale?
Yeah, Bill, good question. I think my bigger risk is the speed. I need to solve those regulatory issues, the permitting, as quickly as we can, because we just simply scale up. You know, we have the we actually have the module, okay, the large scale manufacturing equipment module in Fremont, California already. Yeah. So what we need is get a site selected, go through the regulatory issues as quickly as we can, okay, and then get a construction start, and hopefully finish the construction. This is not build the factory from the ground up. This is already existing building. We need to retrofit as quickly as we can. I told a construction company I'd like to see this in 12 months to 18 months. They said, give me the 18 months to 24 months. Now, hopefully, we can get this in done with 18 months. The equipment, most of the equipment, 80%, 85% of the equipment are off-shelf. We don't have the redesign already there. Our silicon anode manufacturing equipment, we already have the module, okay, in our PLA facility. We just need to put more module in to scale up. I don't see this as a significant challenge, but the speed is what I'm concerned about. I'd like to push this forward as quickly as we can.
Got it. And once operational, how much of your capacity do you foresee contracting versus, you know, kind of just selling at the market?
Yeah, we are. You mean how many capacity already contracted out, bought by customers?
Right. Yeah. Do you have offtake agreements in place for the manufacturing?
Yeah, today, you see, for you, I just gave you a lot of those things we cannot disclose. The one we disclose, let's say we have a BAE system. This is the aviation industry leader. We have 3 years development contract, purchasing contract with them. So we may have more to disclose in the future. Certainly it's not the entire manufacturing has been bought, but we do have a fraction of the capacity already engaging with customer.
Got it. And do you, sorry if this was already covered, but are you planning to just sell the cells themselves, or are you assembling the cells into packs and selling the battery packs?
Yeah, we are cell manufacturer. Our customer are OEMs, also the pack manufacturers. Sometimes the OEM give the OEM work with us, okay, to qualify our cell, then give the purchase order to the pack company. The pack company give the purchase order to us. Not always directed to the OEM.
No, it makes sense. And then are you able to talk about any of the sort of incentives under the Inflation Reduction Act that you expect to be eligible for?
Yeah, the only thing we got is $50 million from DOE, cost sharing grant. We are in discussion. As a matter of fact, my CFO, she is not on the phone. She is on the site to have a discussion with the local authority about the incentives.
Got it. Okay, so sounds like more to come there. And then just the last one for me, kind of going back to the technology a bit, but how does the lifespan or expected lifespan of your batteries, your cells, stack up relative to kind of mainstream lithium ion technologies?
Yeah, in terms of the battery has, when you say span life, I assume that there are two life of batteries. One is called storage life. You put your battery on the shelf. When we supply the batteries to U.S. military, the shelf life is very important, okay, storage life, because the military don't use those things light frequently. They basically put it there, you know, when they need it, they need to use it. So you need to have very long shelf life. You know, we certainly met that criteria. Another lifetime for battery is called cycle life. Okay, for example, for iPhone, the Apple require the suppliers give the battery with 500 cycles. The 500 cycles means, you know, you charge it to the full 100% and you deplete to zero, you know, back and forth for 500 times. Yeah, in reality, very, very few of us use battery that way. So we probably, when we have about 20% left, we charge it. You know, sometimes we don't charge it to 100%. So because of the actual use is different from the specification, you know, we can cycle probably 2,000 times. You know, even Apple ask a supplier, give them 500 cycles. So we can cycle about probably 2,000 cycles. So for our battery, depends on specification. I mentioned, you know, how we use the battery. We can cycle from 300 cycles to 1,200 cycles, depends on what a customer asks us to deliver.
Got it. Very helpful. I'll pass it along. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Levy. Any other questions on the line?
Yes, we have our next question. It's coming from Monish Mahurkar. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Sohn, for that very useful, insightful perspective and answers. I have a couple of questions going back on the technology itself. I think you made a very articulate use case for high-end aviation while talking about a longer-term prospect for EV batteries as well. My question, I guess, is that you also mentioned that this is really just the anode part, right, silicon anode, and that it could simply replace graphite in a standard lithium-ion battery. So at the same time, you also spoke about many features of the way you yourself performed in many, on many fronts. So clearly there is something more than just the replacement of the anode in the cell chemistry. Now, maybe you may not want to talk about that in detail, but could you help us think a little bit about what further, other than simply the anode replacement of graphite with silicon, that drives the higher performance of your cell? And I guess a related question is, you know, you also mentioned that the anode cost is just 12 to 15%. So the moment there is enough scale to equalize the cost of silicon anodes with the prevailing graphite anode, this technology should simply take over, right? Because it's simply giving you much better performance. And a final related question on the EV broader EV applicability. The one feature that you mentioned kind of struck me, that you said it can charge from 0 to 80% in 6 minutes. And that could be an important driver as well. Because on the other front, performance in terms of energy density, volume density, power density, it seems that the prevailing lithium-ion batteries have more or less solved those problems for typical, the average EV driver. You know, you're not talking about high-end aviation-type use cases. But the charging of 0 to 80% in 6 minutes could be a big differentiator. So could you also sort of shed some more light on that? Thank you.
Thank you. Three questions. The first one is we just simply replace anode, make a high energy density, high power density batteries. Primarily, it's just the anode. Okay? We use a silicon nanowire anode. This is a very unique structure. The anode has a capacity 3,400 milliamp hour per gram. Compared to commercial graphite, is about 360 milliamp hour per gram. Okay, our commercial product is 3,400. That's about 9 times higher than commercial graphite anode. So that's the primary reason. Of course, you know, in order for us to take advantage of this high capacity graphite, we need to have a couple other things. Okay, we need to have a very unique electrochemistry. That means our electrolyte is different, okay, from a conventional electrolyte. But this is, in terms of cost, it's just same cost, but different solvent, different additives in our electrolytes, specifically designed for our silicon anode. Also our cell design, for example, NP ratios, those kind of thing. As I said, you know, it's not a simple replacement, okay, in scientific sense. Okay. The graphite is a sea fish, and the silicon anode is a plain water fish. So you have to give a different ecosystem in order to work. Yeah. But 90% come from the silicon anode. That's the first question, first answer to your question. The last one, you mentioned that the charging time. I invite you to look at our video on our website. And this is a true differentiator. Why can we charge it so fast? Okay, because the silicon nanowire structure. Okay, but all the other electro materials, doesn't matter if the cathode or anode, they are particulates, they are particles. Yeah, for ion and the electron goes through those particles, travel through those particles, takes time. Sometimes it's impossible to travel fast. Now, for silicon nanowire, it's very straightforward. Yeah, there is no barrier, so the ion and the electron can travel very, very fast. So this high charging rate, partially due to our silicon nanowire design. Yeah. So in terms of the cost, we mentioned that, you know, it's 12%, 50%. You know, in the traditional, silicon, let's say graphite anode, lithium ion battery manufacturer, and the cathode costs about 60%. You know, the separator costs about 35-40%, and then the anode costs about 12-15%. Yeah. So what do we see? If we look at our BOM cost, let's say we have a similar equipment, just to look at the BOM cost, our manufacturing costs are similar to the industry, currently the incumbents. So we should not have a higher cost than the graphite anode manufacturer. Our silicon source is a silane gas. Our silicon anode manufacturing process is three steps compared to seven steps for graphite anode manufacturing process. So of course we have to validate at the large manufacturing scale, right? But at our PELAB facility, based on our PELAB production, that's the conclusion we have reached.
Great, thank you. And a quick follow-up, since you mentioned about the long shelf life of this particular battery structure, this may be a basic question. Is that shelf life seen in terms of a fully charged state of the battery? So meaning an application, a use case could be that you have that stored for a few months and it could retain most of the charge for it to be utilized, or that's not how you see it?
Yeah. Actually, when you store battery, you may not want to have full charge. For example, I drive Tesla here, I never charging my battery to full overnight. Okay, the full charge is not good for the battery. Just like you deplete the battery to zero is not good for the battery. Yeah, so most time when the people store the battery, they charge it to about 60%, 70%. Okay, when by the time you want to use it, you charge it to 100%. Yeah, then you use it. Yeah, so you don't have that. So how people measure your shelf life? You know, there are different testing protocols. You know, one testing protocol is give you full charge, accelerated testing. Some testing is practical testing. Okay, they charge you to 80%, but at an elevated temperature. Okay, they want to see, because the battery sometimes need to store there for 10 years, 15 years, and in most cases. You have battery at least 5 years or 6 years, so you have to pass the warranty, period. So how people define the shelf life? So they basically define is how much capacity retaining the battery. For example, after 6 months, you measure the capacity. See, is the capacity decreased? After a year, you measure the capacity again. The different application has different requirements about the degradation.
Understood. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks. Levy, any last questions on the line?
We have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, great. I just have one more emailed question. Dr. Sun, thank you so much for your time today. It's been really sort of interesting, and I appreciate all the questions from the audience. Someone's asking, can you talk a little bit about the financing strategy? You obviously have the DOE money, which seems to cover about a third of the CapEx. But then also, if you just talk through how you finance not just the capacity build, but also the ramp in production over the next few years. Thanks.
Yeah, at this moment, in addition to DOE grants, we have about $77 million on our balance sheets. This is certainly sufficient for us to complete the phase one capacity expansion.
All right, great, perfect. All right, with that, we only have about 5 minutes left. We have a hard out here at 12, so we're going to start to wrap up the call. I guess, you know, the first thing I would say is obviously, you know, Dr. Sun, thank you so much for being here today to share the Ampere story with us and UBS institutional investors. Really appreciate it. Hope to have you back on in maybe a year or so to see how the progress has gone. I wish you the best of luck in achieving this. Like I said, sort of increasing the quality and cost of batteries is a huge component of what's broadly trying to be done to electrify transportation. So I really appreciate you being here to share the story. Before I turn it over to you, Dr. Sun, for any closing comments that you might have, just a quick advertisement for the UBS Energy Transition Call Series, which we've been quite busy this month. Just a heads up, our next call is tomorrow. We'll have Sono Motors on. We'll be talking solar electric vehicles. And then next week, we actually have a call on Monday and two on Wednesday on much more macro-focused. On Monday, we'll be talking the impact of the European energy crisis with Aurora Energy Research. On Wednesday, we'll have Aurora Energy Research back on to talk about the U.S. energy outlook. And then on Wednesday as well, we'll have NREL on to talk about the global and U.S. solar market update. So lots there from sort of individual company tomorrow, and then some big macros, how do we set for 2023 around energy calls. So if you need details to any of those, please do email me, and I'll get those to you. All right, with the advertisement out of the way, Dr. Sun, really appreciate you being here today. I will leave the last word to you.
Yeah, John, first, thank you for inviting me and to participate in this call. I thank everyone, every participant for your questions, for your attention. Yeah, the Ampere, as I said, we are a very unique technology company. We are not only have the technology, we're also in commercialization for over 4 years. Okay, we are looking forward to the next phase of our company, build the capacity, and serve the lithium-ion battery industry. Thank you very much.
Great, Levy. We'll wrap there. Thank you so much, everyone.
Everyone, that concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining, and please enjoy the rest of your day.